Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. John McMurtry is back again. I'm delighted to have John. I always like to mention John's books. They meant so much to me. The three that I like to mention are the ones that I read years ago. They sit on my shelves. I recommend them to everybody. Unequal Freedoms, The Cancer Stage of Capitalism, and John's got a new edition of it out, Value Wars. Vital reading. I mean, John's writing is so incisive. He says things that need to be said. He lets people understand these important things that matter so much, that cause so much harm to so many people. I want to jump right into the program with John, but let me just mention a couple of things quickly. I've been writing about Obama's new appointments, usually in a second presidential term. There's a changing of the guard, and a number of new appointments have been made. I believe if they all haven't been confirmed, it's getting pretty close. I wrote about, maybe half a dozen of them. Well, I wrote a new one this morning on what the Washington Post calls Obama's new Labor Secretary, Thomas Perez. The announcement hasn't officially been made. It looks like it's a slam dunk from everything that the Post said. And maybe the announcement will come tomorrow. I wrote about him. He's called a civil rights advocate. It simply doesn't matter what his personal views are. He might have been a terrific civil rights advocate. Well, who knows? He was in Bush 1's Justice Department. He was in Clinton's Justice Department. He's worked for in the Obama administration. He's worked for Eric Holder. He's an unindicted criminal. So I don't know. I don't know whether Perez consorted in his criminality. But it doesn't matter what how good or bad a guy he is. It's what he'll do or be able to do as labor secretary. He won't be able to do a damn thing for labor. I wrote a number of articles about how Obama declared war on labor. It's absolutely outrageous. He did it multiple ways. He's still at war with labor. And I quote some numbers in the article that I wrote. Let me mention two other names. Appointments haven't been made yet. John Kerry beat out Susan Rice as Secretary of State. Well, Susan is up for a big number two, according to the Washington Post. National Security Advisor. That's the job that Henry Kissinger got, where he basically was the Secretary of State. A guy by the name of Rogers had the official title, I believe, maybe somebody else as well as Rogers, but he was a nobody compared to Dr. K. So Susan, up for National Security Advisor, well, I did a number on her. I wrote an article about her, and I really tore her apart. She's pro-war, she's pro-violence, she's anti-social justice, she's contemptuous of rule of law principles, a perfect choice for National Security Advisor.
Also Secretary of State.
one more name, John, and I'll jump to you. Penny Pritzker. Penny Pritzker is up for Commerce Secretary. That announcement could come shortly. It's been a while since I wrote about Penny Pritzker. It was back in the 2008 presidential campaign. She was Obama's leading fundraiser. She's a crook. She's one of the hired heirs. Forbes estimates her fortune at close to $2 billion. Well, you know, like the Wall Street crook, she makes money the old-fashioned way. She steals it. Well, part of what she does for Hyatt is she was in banking. She was part of the subprime bubble and crisis and the rest of it. She stole money from ordinary people. Well, again, perfect credentials to be a Commerce Secretary, wouldn't you say, John?
Well, as always, Steve, you're on the is it like a Pepys diary? Pepys was a guy who wrote way back in the 17th century during the Cromwell period, and he just wrote about what was happening daily, and it didn't have nearly the drive of what you're reporting, but it's become a kind of an immortal work, a diary of the times. We might say, I'm going to actually, because what Steve's telling you now, he's doing all the time in his articles, and then his best of his articles are collected into books, and he's got a recent one out now that's a very important one, Banker Occupation Waging Financial War on Humanity. And I want to actually get to, because it ties all, joins all the dots. In a way, I've read this book very carefully, and in a way, you could call it the decline and fall of American civilization. That could be an alternative title for it. And what a subtitle might be, or certainly a subtitle of meaning, is the social contract to prevent it. because Steve, on the one hand, he's very, very critical, as you can hear, all the time, very trenchant, very direct, says things that I'm surprised he doesn't get sued for slander, but these are matters of public affairs, these are matters of public significance, and he won't, because truth is an absolute defense. And this is where you're going to find the truth that you're not going to find anywhere else. I myself don't read the media or follow, don't have a television set, because I recognize that it's a propaganda medium. Very, very simple technical reason. It is, by its own owner's acknowledgement and description, it's a bearer of a vehicle of advertising messages. And the advertising messages aren't just for the dominantly transnational corporations that are advertised on their pages, but who, as such, are the essential financiers of the advertising vehicle, which at the same time advertises the system. So we have two things going on: advertising the specific dominantly transnational money sequence corporations on the one hand, and then even more the meta role, the meta function, which is to advertise and commercialize the system as good and necessary and without alternative and as eternal. And all of those things you'll find are presuppositions. You won't find anything in the mass media, either the visual or the newspaper, the print media. You won't find anything that conflicts with that story, especially with the story of that this is the free world. Not only the leader of the free world, but identical with the free world. You won't find anything in there that conflicts with that, certainly never in a way, in a sustained way. It's always the fault of this or that individual, and always there's a scapegoat, or it's the enemy abroad who's always, you know, the enemy changes faces, as, you know, whatever convenience, if it doesn't exist any longer. Then you construct a new one, as we found with the Soviet Union moving to jihadists. The enemy is actually constructed in order to continue doing what you're doing and having a justification for it. Well, that is the way, and I've written about this in professional logic journals, and not so, I mean, more formally than I am here, but that is the inner logic of the system, and it's predictable and predictive, that all what they say will do this. Now, when you go to Steve Lenman, on the other hand, although he's a businessman, a retired businessman, he knows the system from the inside and has succeeded from the inside. But you will find exactly the opposite as you find in the corporate media. You will find virtually everything he says will not be found in the corporate media, and that's really why it's so valuable. You're not going to find it out there. He's going to find it. He's going to ferret it out. He's going to find it. And it, whatever he's going to be talking about, he's a rather amazing investigative reporter in terms of picking up all kinds of things that you're not going to find in the newspaper and media of so-called record. And so we have a kind of an antidote to the memory hole. And that's why I think even of the times, it's not just in the immediate time, catching up the current events and so forth, and the actual facts, because it's almost machine gun sharpness to it's one fact after another fact after another fact, which I've found to be all trustworthy, but again, not to be found elsewhere. Now, they are found elsewhere because they're documented, but you're not going to find them in the normal media. So we have a kind of a recovery of our memory of American civilization in decline. And the antidote, which is a sub-theme, Steve doesn't come out and directly argue this, but you'll always find he's concerned about the social contract being violated. And the social contract means basically all of social life support systems that have evolved over centuries, and especially over the last century. All of these programs that have humanized and civilized us are all being stripped away. And he's on it like a rash. He's on that every place it's happening. You know, just quote, over the next trade agreement will be for $4 trillion more to be cut from Social Security, from Medicare, from Medicaid, from public pensions, and other prime targets. That's the kind of swift, summative, insight of what's going on at the system level, which is the decline of the civilization itself. So we get a lot of concentration on the persons, the individuals, as you heard at the lead-in of the program, a lot of focus on them and what their backgrounds are. And what, but he emphasized with several of those candidates, they are people, the civil rights lawyer, for example, Perez, emphasizes, and then I'm putting it in my own terms, he's emphasizing their positional roles, inside a system, and the system has one function alone, and again, I'm going to use my own language, the language, I suppose, of a philosophical axiom. There's one inner drive wheel that propels the entire system at every level, and that is the maximum self-multiplication of transnational money sequences through all life hosts. Whatever can be looted or has to be polluted in order to get value out of anything, whether it's human beings, the working class, or nature, or the atmosphere, or the sinks of waters and air, that will happen, and always this law behind it is governing everything that's going on. And what Steve's doing basically is reporting the phenomena. And as his title indicates, the innermost wheel of all the wheels is Wall Street itself. And we'll keep coming back to that inside his work, that Wall Street, and I don't think this is really going to be a surprise to your listeners, Wall Street's the innermost turning wheel of all the wheels of this transnational money sequence system, for which the only adequate diagnosis is a cancer system. It has all the hallmark characteristics. I'm not going to go back into that now, but that's what it has. And especially the self-multiplication without inhibition, with no life function whatever, with no committed productive function even. It just multiplies itself now without the gold standard, now with all the so-called quantitative easing, which is just giving them trillions of dollars of public wealth on a regular basis. It's now up in so-called asset relief and other programs. It's now up to a total of over $26 trillion. We have, and that's just, it's not just the giveaways, it's the derivatives. What they're using the giveaways for is not for credit, it's for to invest in derivatives, such things as debt default swaps or interest swaps and so on. But that amount, what they're investing with the money that they've gotten as to lever on from the government is 16 times the GDP of the U.S. itself. They have received more. The U.S. GDP is just under $16 trillion. They have received more from the government in just the plan, in just the funding that has been followed by Congress, led by the great Senator Bernie Sanders. They have received more, $16.2 trillion, than the entire GDP of the United States. Anyway, Steve is onto all that. And what I wanted to do, and I know this sounds a bit of a monologue, but it's going through Steve's work, is just actually pick up some, join some of the dots inside the book. And, did you want to say anything, Steve, at this point before I just actually do that?
Oh, this is so much I could add, John. I'll just make a couple of comments. You know, truth is really stranger than fiction. It's hard to believe that literally public money exceeding the national GDP could just be handed over to these crooks that call themselves bankers. And basically it's...
Well, they're a cancer system.
Oh, they're a cancer system.
At the social level of life organization, yeah.
And the supreme power. There's nothing more powerful than money power on a transnational basis. It's more destructive than military wars. I mean, military wars usually take place one country at a time, or maybe a couple at a time. And these financial wars can go on a global scale, harming billions of people at the same time. It's shocking, but it's true.
Yeah, well, the military wars are just instrumental to, in a sense, financializing the whole planet to fit into the Wall Street-driven system of multiplying money for private money possessors without any base, without any committed function, nothing, no function whatsoever except to multiply its demand further in more regions. And, you know, I'm just going to quote again, and I've quoted him before, what Jefferson said. Like, this thing, a cancer, you know, is gestates inside the body for a long time, and at the macro level of its occurrence, it gestates even longer. He said that he thought the banking institutions already, in his time, were already more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already they've set up, and I mean, the words are so current to now, only much more intensely true now, because now the government is giving them the money. They are just taking, they're getting it straight. The government is essentially an instrument of their money sequence multiplication. They've raised up a moneyed aristocracy that has set government at defiance. How prescient that is. I mean, we're having them report now they really can. These people can defraud all they want. They really can't. They can't do anything about it because they run the government. As Dick Durbin said, they pretty well run the place. You know, he's not really complaining. He's a conservative Republican representative. That's just the facts. They run the place. And Obama has said before his election, earning his funds for the election, because he's the brand change for Wall Street after they had failed out with the Bush. Represent, you just do a brand change, and now it's Obama. He does a whole different line, but does the same thing. In fact, he's given more money away than Bush ever did. And he said to Wall Street, and this is a publicly recorded remark, he said, I'm the only one standing between you and the pitchforks. I'm here to defend you. So he defined the presidential position as basically to allow this transnational money sequence system propelled from Wall Street, but it's gone everywhere. It's into the Bank of International Settlements that runs all the banks of the world, all the developed society banks. And we're just having, that's why nothing changes, is because the program hasn't changed. The program hasn't even been seen. So I'm just going to drop back into Steve's book. And just the first five chapters are almost like an argument. One, Wall Street runs America in the ways we've just described. What follows from that is there's going to be a class war because Wall Street doesn't represent much of the people of America. It's not just the 1%. It's much less than 1% that it represents. So it follows. That's why I say it's like an argument built into the table of contents. You have from the fact Wall Street runs America as so described, it follows from that there's going to be a class war because people are not going to fall over and die, although they're being made to as their social life means and support systems, as their employment, as their pensions, as their benefits are stripped from them. That's a war. A war is being made upon them. It follows from the meta program that a class war is made on all the rest and in all the ways just described. Well, what do you do about that? Because it becomes pretty obvious that only one party is benefiting, a very small minority, and everybody else is losing their life security at every level, especially the next generation. So what you do is you use what I mentioned before is the primary ideological operation of the system. And the primary ideological operation of the system is reverse projection. You project onto the victims of what you're doing to them as the reason for attacking them. And so you say, they're preaching class war. So anybody who notices what's going on and says, this has got to stop, this has got to reverse, this does not express the public well, this is against every common life interest of our people, anyone who says that, they're the ones that are committing class war. They're the ones waging class war. It makes your mind spin when they say it. Every time anyone points it out and said, we've got to not let this go on in one way or another, they're the ones that are perpetrating the class war. It's the only time class war is allowed to be used in the media, and is when the right wing or the Wall Street rich say it's class war against them. So it's amazing.
Fortune.
And so what follows from that is you've got to have what they call austerity program cutbacks in order, all this money you're giving away, all this tax giveaways, the tax giveaways, they've got this $26 trillion stored offshore in tax hideaways. Again, that's almost twice the GDP of the U.S. It's more than the GDP of the U.S. and China combined, is stowed away as tax evasion sites, let alone the tax cuts and tax giveaways and all the money going out in asset relief programs and all the rest. So basically, you're getting down to all the money demand of the world is being controlled by these people for what? To invest in more of it. All what's called investment and investors, we must attract investors, all that means is attract private money sequences, foreign usually money sequences, transnational certainly money sequences, to our shores. What? And the way you attract them is by multiplying their money sequences further, by giving them the tax breaks, the subsidies, the infrastructures, and everything else. And then now countries all compete with one another and to get it. So, but if they're paying no taxes, if they're taking all the public money for more of their, basically, it's a very large-scale macro Ponzi scheme, then where you're going to have to take the money away from the people. So one way you do it is by the class war that's being waged all the time, and the form it takes, because you can't say you're waging class war, is we call it austerity for you. And now austerity for you means austerity for everybody else, the over 99%. They lose their assets, they lose their pensions, they lose their employment, they lose their wage levels, they lose their positions, they lose their pensions and their benefits, and on it goes. And then we just call it, oh, that's austerity. And again, you'll notice the reverse projection. The austerity that is most of all needed in the world is of these money sequences themselves. They have to be stopped as a cancer has to be stopped. But what you do is, in order not to stop them, you impose austerity, again, the reverse projection, you impose austerity on everybody else, to the point where, because you have a model that has no life coordinates to it, anything goes. There's no limit that they won't. They'll take away your food stamps next. They'll take away anything because it doesn't even compute to them. All it computes to them is to maximize the money sequences. So then we go on to what follows from this are all kinds of tech, all kinds of techniques and operations to do it. And one of them is, and I'm just going to go to the IMF, for example, and here's, I'm just going to give a quote from Steve, because again, he gives a lovely profiles, very, very swift but true profiles. What you do is you privatize state enterprise, sold for a fraction of the real worth. You have mass layoffs, you have deregulation, you have deep funding cuts, you have wage freezes and reductions, you have unrestricted free access for Western corporations, you have corporate-friendly tax cuts without end, you have tax increases for working households, you have trade unions and suppression and marginalization, you have harsh repression against proponents of social democracy, civil and human rights. All of that follows. All of those things must come from the transnational money sequence system centered in Wall Street, and the IMF there is to be the international body of enforcement, ultimately backed by NATO. So we have, and then we really actually go, from there, what he calls IMF financial terrorism, we can follow it. It's gone through Latin America, it lost, well, he says lost a decade. They, until we had the Latin American Revolution led by the heroic Hugo Chavez, Latin America was a basket case. The loans to Chile, for example, he reports, and again, it's getting away from the memory hole. We keep these facts alive to know what's happening to us, because most of all, with cancer, people get spooked at the social level of life organization. They succumb. They get passive. they get discouraged. They can't do anything about it. And the key way to do that is the memory, the social memory is lost for what's gone on. And it just mentions the fact that the Chile wages were reduced by 40%. You know, and this is all called correcting maladjustments. So what can they possibly mean by maladjustments? Maladjustments mean the transnational money sequences aren't getting enough. And so we structurally adjust you so they have more. And every one of the operations that Steve referred to in the earlier page there is such an operation to keep enabling these transnational money sequences to grow and maximize further. And it's an interesting thing to try to see any one of these operations, any one of these expressions of the system as doing anything else but fulfilling that master, what I call meta-value program, that code, that money sequence value code, and it is a value code that lies at the basis of it all, but it's a cancerous code. So we get with the LIBOR scandal is worth mentioning too, because who knows about the interbank loan rate? I mean, does anybody even know the London interbank loan rate? I mean, you've never probably heard of it. What they do is they fix the interest rates when they're not supposed to, but they fix the interest rates so they don't have to pay much to those who deposit. Because one of the big things that happened under the suspension of Glass-Steagall, the big thing that happened there was it used to be that you couldn't use your depositors' money to do your own casino gambling on the stock markets, rating currencies and bonds and derivatives, etc., etc. You couldn't use their money for that. That's your own business. Well, as soon as Glass-Steagall was eliminated, by the way, by a Democrat administration, by the Clinton administration, which he fought for very hard, if you want to know what Clinton is ultimately made up of, he allowed the whole Wall Street cancer to break free. And so what they do is they fix the interest rates. And here's another one of these what I might call perorations, which are sort of summative sweeps across what the banking systems do. And so they went along with their methods, which include market manipulation, and each one of these could be an essay. Market manipulation, well, you know, you control prices themselves. It's not a free market, of course. A free market is a market in which no supplier or demander influences the supplier demand. If they can control the supply or if they can control the demand out there, then it's not a free market. It's an oligopolous or controlled market. And that's, of course, what we have now, not only the banks, but in the productive, so-called productive enterprises, you have, less than five corporations basically dominating the world. So we don't market, once you can manipulate the market, you can do what you want with the prices. The insider trading, the front running is, leading the market up by buying a whole bunch of something and then selling it off at the peak. I mean, why you can do that? It's all legal. And sell it off at the peak, everybody else takes a bath and you walk away with billions. No problem. If you've got a control of enough money, if you have no gold standard, if you have no legal tender base, if you have nothing required here and you have government funneling it, siphoning it, hiding it in as fast as it can, well, and all this is quite possible, and it continues on even after the 2000. Nothing's changed. Not a single rule has been changed. Not a single person is prosecuted. Theft and conspiracy on top of it all. I mean, the fraudulent securities, which, were basically, they got a whole bunch of, well, that's a long story I've told before, but basically it's fraudulent securities that they sold around the world and brought around the 2008 crash. And, of course, misrepresentation to do so. Ponzi schemes is really a characteristic of the whole nature of this thing. You have much more money out there than what you, than your obligations require you to have. You leverage and leverage and leverage and leverage, to 100 to 1. And, then you just, as long as you have enough money in the till at any specific time, then you're gonna have enough money to cover it all out there, even if only you have 1/100th of it. And then when they collapses, as it did in 2008, then the government steps in and supplies you with lots more money called quantitative easing. I mean, it's really quite more than Orwellian. False accounting, embezzling, appointing industry favorites as regulators. Well, we know it's just one big swinging door, one revolving door. All these people, you know, that's what they go into politics for.
Indeed, John. Oh, there's so much more I could add. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and I'll make a quick comment as we get into the second half of the program. Short break. We'll be right back. McMurtry. John, you're doing absolutely great. I'll just comment very briefly. Press TV has me on a lot, and they invited me on today. They wanted me to tape a program that I taped on this program a couple of weeks ago. It's a program called The Money Train. I didn't know Press TV had the program, but they had me on talking about the Bilderbergers, and they're involved in everything, but for certain, money is at the root of what these guys are into. And the man who is the lead Bilderberg figure, he has a nickname known affectionately, as the Master Spider. I'm talking about David Rockefeller. David Rockefeller is a lot more than about oil. J.P. Morgan Chase, that's Rockefeller's bank. Well, I don't know how much longer he'll be around. I think he's 97, and sometime later this year, if he's still living, he'll be 98, but he shows up at all the Bilderberg meetings. Well, Press TV invited me to tape another Money Train program. They wanted me to talk about George Soros. The program, they scheduled the taping for right now, while this program is going on, so I couldn't do it. They're going back to check. They tape in advance, and they air it, I think, during the week. They're going back to check to see if I can do it tomorrow. And the topic, John, will be George Soros.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have a chapter in my banker occupation book on George Soros. You talked about him last week, I believe. Well, I call him what he is. He's a New World Order confidence man and a hell of a lot more, a world-class predator if there ever was one. But anyway, I hope they can work out their schedule because I would love to talk about George Soros.
Actually, Soros was one of the things that I'm not going to be able to pick up everything I wanted to talk about in the book, but since you brought it in, I'd like to also, since you brought in Bilderberg, because there's, you know, of course, Rockefeller was the founder of Bilderberg and is a... And that's where he said the remark that I keep quoting, surely an elite of intellectuals and bankers is superior to the auto-determination, that means self-determination, auto-determination of nations practiced in past centuries. And he thanked the press very much for keeping the glare of publicity off the plan during those years. He said that in 1991 at Bilderberg. So he very much revealed and I've in my recent works I've used that as sort of he indicated I love precise statements even if it's diabolical. He really names the game. And this is not done. This is one of the main things the media do not do ever is name the game. He names the game. And Soros names the game. This is one of the quotes from Steve's book, which I've used since, in which I'm, again, remember, I'm a philosopher, so I look for underlying principles and I look for arguments. I look for the premises that just aren't normally spoken. And what so, and that's why I think it was so valuable that that Rockefeller told us about, however diabolical, told us about the plan and what it was. And of course, it's been enacted in just that way. Soros has called capitalism totalitarian capitalism. You don't hear that from anybody else. You'll never read that in the mass media, but he said that that's our biggest danger. He said that back in the late 1990s, or mid-1990s. He's in the Atlantic Monthly. He said, capitalist, totalitarian capitalism is our main danger. And then he founds open society institutions, which are trying to bring back, I mean, I even think Nation of Change is sponsored by, but I'm not sure of that, is sponsored by Soros, where you bring back a democratic discourse and you use all your money that you make, $100 billion in a week from betting against the British pound, for example, you use the money to do that. And you say what nobody else says. And another thing he says that is very crucial, I think, and I'm quoting from Steve's book here because he reports it. You see, one of the good things here is that it is reported, even though it makes Soros look rather more thoughtful than you might think. He says, as a market agent, I am not responsible, and I know this by heart because I think it's so significant. It reads the inner value code of the age. As a market agent, I am not responsible for the consequences for the consequences of my actions.
He makes the market, because the market is God.
The so-called market, and you know, it's not a free market at all. It's an oligopolis, quasi-monopolis, transnational money sequence system devouring the world, devouring all human and social and natural life support systems to grow itself. It's a cancer. But he's at least recognizing that it has been taken as our God, and it is a totalitarian God, and he's, as it were, acknowledging, listen, under this system, which I'm a huge beneficiary of, but I'm at least giving the money towards and giving the mouth towards revealing what is the problem. It's a totalitarian system. And it makes nobody responsible for the consequences of their actions. So on the one hand, you could say, well, what an excuse. My God, I've never heard a more diabolical excuse from the worst fanatic in the world. All of that's true. That's always how fanatics do it. Hey, well, it's God telling me it's my nation or my blood or whatever. You know, always a big excuse that you're not really responsible for the consequences of your action. That's how you tell a psychopathic fanatic, is that. And he's given the expression of a psychopathic fanatic. He's expressed it. But at the same time, he's aware of what he's saying. He's revealing the diabolical nature of the system that we now live under, which he's also saying is totalitarian. So I think Soros is all that you say. I don't disagree with any of your critique of Soros, Steve. But what I say is this person has a mind and a courage enough to say what's actually going on. Nobody else names the game. The same is true of Rockefeller. Diabolical. But at least they've got it, because our main problem is we are in a mindless mush state. And at least these guys are breaking through to name the game as totalitarian, as we're overriding all democracy of past centuries. We're overriding it. That's it. And we're lying to you. He doesn't say lie. We just thank the press for keeping the glare of publicity off what we're doing. That is, we're running over democracy with the interests of bankers' money sequences. Soros while he's stealing the world blind through currency speculation, which is his main gig. By the way, he's involved with others, because the thing is to get these syndicates of huge amounts of money that determine what the price of something will be, and when you short it, you sell it all off, and then you've made a promise to provide that currency elsewhere through a derivative contract, and you collect. And so as long as you could assemble all the money, and it's become easier and easier and easier to do, and banks will have to help Soros in doing this, because they're the ones through which these notes are, you know, all basically counterfeit, are transmitted. While he's doing that, exploiting the system blind, he's saying, under this system you have no responsibility. Now that's the one, why that's so important is that, I don't remember how well you remember, you will remember, Friedman. They just done taken away their lovely religious study school to make it a Milton Friedman kind of mausoleum of tribute to him. This guy, he proposed two very, very, very big lies, and this is what made him so famous and why he got so far. The first big lie was to say that it's government spending of money that gives rise to inflation, and we've got to stop government spending money, monetarism. When in fact, 97% of all the money out there is by the private banks issuing it through debt and service charges. Just a lie beyond lies, and that's what swung the world. Because people buy into it because it becomes, you know, that's economists get hired to basically give cover stories. That was number one big lie. Number two big lie was more metaphysical. He says only under the market do you have individual responsibility. And that's what freedom is, individual responsibility. This is what the Tea Party and everybody on the Republicans all use this argument. It's the standard metaprogram argument. Is that we've got to make sure that we have individual responsibility. Soros blew the whistle on that claim by saying, as a market agent, I have no responsibility for the consequences of my action. And so the biggest lies of all, and he's also said we require financial regulation, though he's a little vague on it, we have in short some disclosure of the nature of our system. Now when you have a cancer, this cancer always succeeds by the life host not recognizing it, or the surrounding cell community on whatever level does not recognize that it's a problem. It does not recognize that it's multiplying out of control and destroying the life functions of the body with absolutely no function itself, and just spreading and metastasizing. It doesn't recognize it, and that's why the cancer goes on. That's why they do everything to try to stimulate the immune system. That's the basic cure to cancer. There isn't a cure to cancer, but what you try to do is substitute for the immune system. That's what chemotherapy is, for example. That's what, and anyway, I'm not going to get into all those, but it's except to say the host body, the life host, which in this case is society and eventually the biosphere itself, the life host does not recognize through humanity the disease that afflicts it. It doesn't recognize it at the social level. It doesn't recognize it at all. In fact, it's forbidden to even Steve. You find it very difficult to use the word cancer system. It's all like it's taboo. And even though you will agree it is one, it's taboo. Now these people are doing some recognition of the nature of the system. They are giving some recognition of its diabolical nature without saying it. Well, he does say totalitarian. Who else says that?
John, you know, the one thing Soros will not do, he will not go on Bloomberg News, he will not go on CNBC or CBS or CNN for an interview that'll last longer than 30 seconds and say the things that you're repeating he said in other venues. He might give a talk or something or other to an audience.
They would probably, they'd probably drone him.
Oh, indeed. I mean, if he ever went on national television and he said, and he called capitalism a tyrannical system. Well, that would be the last interview he ever had.
Is our biggest danger. That's a direct quote.
Oh, indeed. So, by the way, Chomsky long ago called giant corporations private tyrannies. I thought that was a great phrase.
Oh, yeah, they are, too. Isn't that so funny that we think of democracy and free market and democracy, and the free market isn't a free market at all. In fact, it's a quasi-monopolist money control and growth system. And then the one thing, the one rule, like actually Marx said this many years ago. He said, the worst that the capitalists can accuse us of is trying to run society like one of their factories. We have this absolute command system, and again, the reverse projection. What do we call the alternative economy? We call it a command system. And the command system is totally imitative of capitalism. CEO from the top down. And that's now, of course, taken over our public institutions as well. I mean, this is part of the cancer, is that whole top-down control, total command that we have as in a factory is now happening everywhere. And always the command is for what? It's always to multiply money sequences to more. And never for anything else. If it were, one could understand why. So it's not only a command system, it's not only a private tyranny, as Chomsky elegantly puts it, or rightly puts it. It's for a cancerous purpose. But again, the taboo is to actually diagnose the nature of it. That is still taboo. That is still not being said. And I'm saying it, of course. I say it everywhere, and the more, I mean, I gave that diagnosis. And by the way, it was when it initially came out, there were several people who picked up on it. Interestingly, Pat Buchanan picked up on it. The dean of business at Yale University picked up on it. I noticed recently that the latest Nobel Prize winner who writes for the New York Times, Krugman, he referred to the metastasizing, financial metastasizing that's going on. So the model is finding its way out because, and I want you to actually, let me pose a question to you, Steve. What model, now Chomsky gives the one about private tyranny, it's true, but it's not adequate to all the facts. What model or paradigm that is an explanatory framework explains all that's going on? What even comes close to explaining all that's going on?
Well,
everything confirms it.
Well, it goes back to the power of money, John.
No, yeah, but the power of money is vague. The power of money is vague. I mean, the power of money could be beaver pelts. The power of money could, you know, money is totally vague. It's what's done with the money. It's what the purpose of the money, whether it's as a medium of exchange or whether it's a self-multiplying demand with no base, with no function, et cetera, et cetera. You say it goes back to money, but that's impossibly vague in terms of explaining what's going on.
Well, I think, a better way to explain it is the corrupt connection between government and business, where basically a government is simply the lackey of business, and Wall Street, the money controllers, are at the top of the pecking order. And literally, I mean, government, legislators, the president, the appointed bureaucrats, if they didn't come from the giant corporations, they literally could enact the laws that would run the country responsibly, the way Chavez did in large measure in Venezuela.
Right.
But they do exactly the opposite. They literally turn over the country, lock, stock, and barrel to these predators, and they do any damn thing they want.
And that's what a cancer does.
Yep.
It invades and occupies.
By the way,
unless you have cancer, you're not going to have any model because, you know, you can say, well, they run it at the job, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't explain what's happening because it's not just that they run it from the top. They've always done that. As you know, the Constitution is based on private property and money property. That's why it was in trouble right from the beginning with the moneyed aristocracy because it was written to protect them. But it didn't do what it's doing now because it didn't, you know, it had to have a gold standard. I mean, that's in fact what it was fighting over was the independence of its money from private power. That's the greatest irony of history, is the U.S. Constitution, the U.S. Revolution itself, according to Benjamin Franklin, was fought. It would have resolved itself if they'd left them with the right to print their money as a sovereign, or, you know, as colonies, to have their own money and print it in accordance with their productivity, which is what they did, and everything was succeeding very well, especially in Pennsylvania where Benjamin Franklin came. Then the private Bank of England, and it was private until the 30s, the private Bank of England, and it still is private in its operations, the private Bank of England canceled its, got the sovereign, that is the king, to cancel the right to print money. That was a policy. That's what caused the revolution, according to Benjamin Franklin, was the sovereign control over money. So it isn't just money, it's the sovereign control and democratic accountability of the money for a life-based function. That's what it should be, and that's what you've described. When it isn't that, it behaves in the way we see it's behaving. It's the very opposite of all of that. And I'm going to repeat the question. What model, what explanatory framework takes into account and explains all of those phenomena?
Well, I'm not certain I have the answer that you want, John. I'm going to let
you in. No, there just isn't one. There isn't one. That's why one's driven to it. This is 20 years of diagnosis has gone into this. And it was originally published with medically refereed. What the reason it's not, you're not picking up on it, is it's taboo. And you, of all people, are ready to take on any taboo, but not this one. And so in order to help you with this one, I just reflect, and I won't press it any further now, just reflect on what other explanatory framework takes into account and explains and predicts all of those phenomena. You're not
going to
get close.
I'm going to give that some deep thought.
Good.
You get into deep philosophical questions, but this is a biggie. This is a real big one.
Well, this is huge, man. This is life and death of the very biosphere.
It really is.
That's why I press it on. That's why I did the second edition. And that's all, you know, when I went into the second edition, you know, and this is 15 years after the first diagnosis, which was in, as I say, a refereed journal, and then went into a book. I was just going to leave it because everything was confirmed by all the events since, including, of course, 2008, including 2001. It was already almost predicted, 2001.
John, let me interrupt you very briefly. We've got about 3 minutes left.
I want
to be sure you get in any important thoughts you haven't included, but I'll mention one thing that's very important to me, and I've written about it before, and I write about it in my Thomas Perez article for tomorrow. What's going on is, and it's been going on for decades, there's a war on people going on in Western societies, and
yeah,
certainly in America, yeah, and I quote statistics, where organized labor in the 1950s, 35% of the country was organized, and now today the private organized labor is down, the latest year-end numbers, roughly 6.6%, absolutely decimated. So you talk about a production system, John. People are nothing more than production imports. You milk everything you can out of them, and then you dump them, and you take all their rights away.
Any resistance in the life host is destroyed.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what they do. Any collective resistance in the life host is destroyed at the government level, at the union level, at the organizational level, on, you know, if they don't have it, that's the first thing that's destroyed. That's what the drones, they're trying to, any collective organized life resistance is destroyed. That's its first step.
Absolutely.
That's predictable.
Absolutely. And if there are resistors, then they're met with very stiff repression. That's what goes on. And that's what the police state laws and the books are for. Anybody who sticks their head up too aggressively, they can expect possibly to get it chopped off. And you see it in the streets with police beating up on people and all that kind of stuff.
Right across the world.
One
of the things I didn't get to, it, and I just might mention them because I hope we come back, because they do pick up all the dots, you know, the predatory health care system, the police state system, and the military dictatorship across the world through native system. All these are things that your book covers. And then, of course, the solution end of it, the public banking. But hopefully we'll be able to return to some of these, because they're very, very core issues. As you say, we're on the biggest of all issues.
Oh, absolutely. And if we could ever figure out a way to solve this, John, we could really break the Gordian knot and accomplish who knows
well,
what.
I think the ultimate act is the act of understanding, and that's why I'm saying when you got a problem, you got to diagnose it right.
Oh, absolutely. Understanding and a commitment to realize we are being screwed so badly that if we don't do something about it, it's just going to get worse. It's going to get worse. I mean, this is the way stuff happens in totalitarian societies until people lose all rights. And then, you know, you get to a point where, my God, I mean, the stormtroopers are in the streets. They'll shoot you dead if you stick your head up. You got to do something before it gets to that. John, we are out of time. I look forward to getting you back. I'll email you once I get off the program. I'll let you know if I go back on the money train to talk about George Soros. It's kind of late halfway around the world. Oh, I think it's after midnight there, so I won't hear anything till tomorrow. But if they want me to do it, I'll do it. I have to go downtown to a satellite studio. But I don't mind doing that. I've gone down there lots of times.
You mentioned the cancer recognition is implicit.
Indeed. Indeed so. John, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve.
Join us next week. Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.